Welcome to episode 2 of the Let's Get Down to Business podcast. I'm your host, Charlotte Newman, and today I want to chat to you about everything getting started. You have a new venture you wish to pursue, so what will you need, how will you do it, and what else do you need to be thinking about? To help with this topic, I'm joined today by Malcolm Palmer, the Managing Partner at A4G LLP. Hi Malcolm, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Charlotte. Yeah, very good.
Good. Well, I thought we'd just kick off straight away. And I wanted to discuss the results of a very recent survey carried out by the Federation of Small Businesses. They suggested that 20 to 25% of new businesses fail within their first year. But they also suggested that 42% failed due to there being no market need for their services or products, 29% failed because they ran out of cash, and 23% failed because they didn't have the right team running the business. So that first one seems a pretty damning reason. And as we'll actually be covering the others in future episodes, one of the questions I wanted to ask you to kick off is, what ways can our listeners go about doing market research for their new product or service?
Oh, great start. So, I mean, as it happens, one of my favourite clients is a research company called Relish Research, and they do some amazing work. But, you know, that's going to be for sort of established businesses with a little bit of a budget, really. So if you're just a startup, you're not going to have the budget for paying somebody else to do it. So you kind of got to go about the research yourself. And one of the things that the people at Relish have said to me is that you've got two types of market research. You've got, they call it qual and quant, right? So qual is qualitative research. So this is where you talk to a group of people and you ask them lots of questions and you really sort of dig deep about their preferences and trying to get that information that'll help you design your product or service or whatever. Quant is just a numbers thing, you know, where you test out something with a couple of hundred people and you get a percentage of the people that like it. So, you know, that's still going to be pretty difficult for a startup, but nevertheless, you know, that you'll know people that are your typical type of customer, and you can go about, you know, just asking them questions, whether they're members of your family or friends of friends, you know, just sort of dig into it a bit. The big thing that research people are really good at, that most human beings aren't good at, is having an open mind. And you know, lots of people, I mean, I didn't know that percentage actually, but it doesn't surprise me, because lots of people have got this idea and it's really based around something that they want to do, and therefore, rather than them having identified something that is a good business idea, they've identified something that is a preference for them, and then they try and find evidence to support that. And this can go in the human brain, this can go to quite big extremes really, which people will call it cognitive dissonance, which is where you are so wedded to an idea that you just ignore all the evidence that is telling you that this is a bad idea and is not going to work. And, you know, the tiny little bits of evidence that you find that support your view and what you want to do, they're all the things you filter in. And, you know, the longer people go on with this, the more, you know, the deeper trough they can get in with, really. And I think sometimes you just need to follow that that old saying, which is try and try again and then stop. No point wasting your life doing something that's never going to work.
Yes, definitely. Well, that's very interesting. So you actually touched on about a typical customer. So how, you know, if they've got an idea and they've got the evidence to support it, the actual evidence, what could they go about thinking what their typical customer would actually be like?
Yeah, so, you know, it's possible that that's the wrong way around, actually, because, you know, the service or the product or whatever, and the customer, you know, it's a chicken and egg situation. And, you know, I know lots of very successful business people who ended up in a business that was completely different to what they started out as. But, you know, they had some customers and those customers wanted certain things. So they actually went about finding the solutions or the service or the product for that customer that they had, rather than coming up with the service or product and finding the customer. So, you know, if you've got something, a service and product already designed, you need to think about who these people are that are going to be wanting it. And, you know, there'll be certain characteristics about those individuals. You know, it might be to do with their age or their income or the time they have available or whatever it is, really. But, you know, once you've got some of those customers, then, you know, then you've got to flip it back the other way, really, and say, what else can I deliver for those, you know, for those customers? You know, and famously, if you read the story of Alan Sugar, I think, didn't he start off selling boiled beetroots or something, you know? And somewhere along the line, he just started moving into all these other things as the opportunities arose. So once you've got one customer, you know, do whatever things they need that you can deliver, of course.
Yes, definitely. Exactly. And so it's fairly well known, actually, that people are around twice as likely to achieve their goals if they have them written down. So how important is a business plan?
Yeah, you know, so there's some great stories about this, isn't there? There's this, I think it was the Yale survey or something, where they tracked a whole load of people who were studying at Yale University, and they tracked them for the next 25 years of their lives to see how successful they were. And then they looked back at what were the characteristics of those people 25 years earlier, and compared to the ones that weren't quite successful, you know. You know, what they found was that academic ability had made no difference to the level of success. I mean, obviously they're all at Yale, so they're all pretty smart people already, but the one thing that made the biggest difference was that the really successful people had a plan. And you know, I think a lot of people sometimes, you know, subscribe to this the first casualty of war is a plan thing, you know, and they think, well, you know, I had a plan before and I ended up doing something completely different. But you need a plan to start with. You know, you've got to adapt it as you go, but there's got to be some kind of plan so you're going off in the right direction. And, you know, when people talk about business plans, they imagine this, you know, printed document with a cover around it and cash flow forecasts and profit forecasts and all sorts of analysis and all the rest. And the reality is, what you're thinking of is the document that you probably get us to put together for the bank, because you want them to give you an overdraft. And that document is very often a complete work of fiction based on all sorts of predictions and forecasts that you have no idea whether they're right or not. I mean, I remember just as a sort of a newly qualified accountant putting together this fantastic profit and cash flow forecast for a business plan for a client, based on all the, you know, all the numbers that they'd given me. And the end conclusion was, well, you don't need an overdraft based on these figures. You're going to end up with £1 million in the bank at the end of the year. Why are we doing this business plan? Of course, the figures were complete nonsense, you know, and it wasn't a realistic plan. What, you know, a good plan can just be a one-page document. And the way you start that is you work backwards. So you pick a time scale, might be a year, 3 years, 5 years, whatever it is, and just say, where do I want to be at that point? You know, that's your outcome. And then you think, what levels of performance do I need to hit in order to be at that point? So and then you can start to drill down into these numbers. Okay, well, to be at that point, you know, we're going to need to have 30 customers spending an average of £1,000 a month with us, or, you know, whatever those numbers are. And then you've got to think, right, okay, so let's, you know, to get those 30 customers, how many potential customers do I need to reach? Okay, well, we get about 1 in 4 of the people that we meet. So that means I need to meet 120 potential customers. So, you know, and you just start to drill down all these numbers to give you some numbers to work towards. And then when you've got the numbers, the next thing is, what am I going to do in order to achieve these numbers? So this is your action plan. These are the individual steps that you are going to take in order to hit those numbers, which will ultimately allow you to achieve your outcome. And then you've got to put it in an order. Now, people make the mistake of putting things in an order of priority, but it's not an order of priority. It's the order. Sometimes it's something very trivial that you need to do in order to be able to do all the other things. I need to install Word on my computer because otherwise I can't produce these documents that I need to do whatever it is you need to do. So, you know, you get that little action plan in order of how you're going to do things. Now you're up and running, you know. The difference between the successful people and the unsuccessful people is that there will be things on that list that you don't like doing. You know, you might not have been great at school at English, so therefore you're kind of trying to avoid the written stuff. Or you might not be very good at numbers, so, you know, you're a great people person. So you focus more on the relationships and, you know, the numbers, they don't matter, you know. But everything matters. You know, everything that's on that plan matters. And you got to step outside your comfort zone and do the things that are on that plan that are required to be done. And the plan will evolve. You know, you can constantly keep updating that. You know, we've effectively started with an outcome of where we want to be, and we've now turned it into your to-do list for today.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Brilliant advice for our listeners. And I wanted to touch on where you said, obviously, people have different skill sets when they're starting out businesses. So how important would it be, do you think, to have support from friends, family and advisors?
Yeah, that's a good one, really. I mean, and a lot of successful people are very self-driven. And, you know, they don't need huge amounts of support sometimes. What they do need, though, is they need to not be in relationship or, you know, a house where people are actively trying to stop them, you know, where somebody's really negative about what they're doing. Some business people that are successful have spouses who are completely behind them and, you know, are involved in the business sometimes, and perhaps they do some of the things for them that you know, are that person's weakness or whatever. And some of them are in, have got spouses who just let them get on with it. You know, the spouse has no interest in what the business does. One of my clients said to me that he'd been in his offices for 20 years, and he was pretty convinced that his other half wouldn't know how to get to those offices. They'd never been there, but it didn't matter. You know, they're a team in a completely different way, really. So I think if the plan requires you to do lots of hours, if the plan requires you to borrow money against your house, you know, these things start to impact on family life. And, you know, if you haven't got a spouse, partner, whatever, behind you, then this is going to make it really difficult.
Yep, 100% agree. 100% agree. I wanted to, therefore, just change path a little bit on this one, because we've talked about market research, getting the plan right, having support from the beginning. On the flip side, what would be the benefits of considering how a business might trade from an early stage? Now you've got a plan.
So we're sort of talking like the legal status, really. So, you know, the main ways that you're going to trade are going to be sole trader or limited company. If it's just you or just you and your spouse. Obviously, it could be that it's a partnership, that you're going into business with somebody else. So you have what we call an unincorporated partnership, which is just the two individuals together, and you also have what's known as a limited liability partnership. So that's the limited liability part of this is very important. So you have limited companies and you have limited liability partnerships. And what that means is that you can only lose what you put into the business. I mean, there are, you know, there are a few legal restrictions, and there's a few things that if you were, you know, incredibly reckless and you took money out of the business knowing that it was insolvent, there are ways that insolvency practitioners can claw some of that money back. But generally speaking, if you've got a limited company or a limited liability partnership, you can only lose what you've put in. And then a sole trader, or just a, you know, a normal partnership, as you might call it, unincorporated would be what we would call it, everything's at risk. You know, if the business loses, let's say you got sued for £1 million, then and you didn't have insurance to cover that, we'll come on to the insurance bit in a minute, then, you know, everything you've got is at risk. You know, if you own a house jointly with your partner, then 50% of the equity in that house is at risk. So I think sometimes our profession, accountants, are a little bit guilty of driving the conversation purely based on tax, because each of those businesses I've described are taxed in different ways. And if you go back, whatever it was, 10, 15 years, even the smallest business was being set up as a limited company because the tax regime was so favourable. And it's not anymore. You know, it's marginally favourable. When, you know, if we're talking to sort of relatively low earnings, below the 50 grand a year profit, there's not a massive advantage to trading as a limited company. So the accountants may be sort of steering people towards being a sole trader, you know, because it keeps the cost down, et cetera, et cetera. But of course, the sole trader doesn't have limited liability. So you've got to weigh up those two things, limited liability and the tax regime. You know, put that alongside the extra admin costs of running a limited company or an LLP. And, you know, the way we go about these things is probably the way that we go about any issues, really, is that we just spell out the pros and cons to people. And if you give people the right information, they'll make the right decision, the one that's most suitable for them.
Yes, brilliant. Well, that's great advice. And I know you touched on that insurance there, because we're going to be covering actually insurance in another episode, a whole one dedicated to the topic, as it is a big one. But as you touched on it, what would you say to a business owner who hadn't yet thought about this side of things?
Yeah, I would put an hour or two aside at least, and, you know, quite a bit of that time spent driving home from work or lying in bed at 4:30 in the morning when, you know, when you've woken up early, just thinking about this. You know, sometimes you need to go to the, you know, the deepest, darkest corners of what could go wrong, and think to yourself, am I insured for this? You know, there's plenty of businesses out there where the worst possible outcome could be that somebody died. You know, that there are, that the nature of what they do is if something went catastrophically wrong, you know, people could get injured or worse. And you need to really think, what can go wrong here? Am I insured for it? You know, and there's plenty of stuff. You can research this on the internet. You can talk to insurance brokers. You know, there's standard policies for things like public liability and employer liability, you know, professional indemnity insurance for accountants, solicitors, architects, all those sort of people. You know, there's lots of these standard policies out there, but does that cover everything? You know, does that cover all the things that could go wrong? And, you know, there's plenty of people have ended up going bankrupt because of a one-off disaster that happened in their business that they weren't insured for.
Yeah. Well, I think it's fantastic advice. And I know many of our listeners probably wouldn't want to be thinking too much about the not so pleasant side of business from an early stage. But do you think it's worth them also getting legal advice on certain aspects such as terms and conditions with their customers and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the you might want to shop around a little bit for this, because as a startup business, you're presumably not going to have a big budget to pay a lawyer to draw terms and conditions up from scratch. But, you know, a lot of these things can be relatively standard documents, which with a small discussion with a good law firm, they can tweak a little bit. And cover, again, you know, some of the things that might go wrong might simply be to do with the relationship with the customer. You know, the two issues are connected, really, aren't they? You know, if there was something that went wrong, but your terms and conditions made it very clear that the customer was responsible for that, then you're not going to be legally liable for it. But if your terms and conditions don't, then who knows the way a court might look at things further down the line. So, yeah, you know, getting some good legal advice at the outset without blowing your entire working capital on those costs is a good idea.
Definitely. Well, that's fantastic. So I just wanted to summarise, because today we've discussed about target market. We've talked about having a really good, or at least a written plan, and touched on the legal side of things. And there's so many other things that we could have covered today, all about getting started. But I wanted to ask you, Malcolm, where can new business owners get help and support from these topics and many others? And what sort of advice could they actually expect to get?
New business owners. I mean, we've got a great session that we run as part of the Breakthrough program called Getting Started. It's just a sit down, work through a program of all the issues and go off on whatever tangents are relevant to you, really. Alongside that, I think if you just rely on other people to be telling you all the things that you need to do, you're not going to make a success of this business. You know, you will have heard me say this about me, every successful man or woman has had the main hand in their own education. And certainly all of the successful clients that I've got, you know, they're pretty well read. They may have all read completely different books. They may get all their knowledge from lots of different places, but you know, they're constantly looking for new ideas and constantly exploring how they can improve.
Brilliant, that's fantastic. So have you got any last pieces of practical advice to anyone wanting to get started with a new business or a new venture today?
Last pieces of practical advice. I mean, there's a few things, really. I mean, you know, one or two things that people overlook quite easily. I mean, the first thing you just need to think about is your record keeping. You know, that not just your accounting records, but how you're going to save all your correspondence with clients. You know, there's some great bits of software out there, but equally, you can do a lot of this stuff just by using the structure of Windows Explorer. You know, just think about that. Get yourself organized when there's not that much to organize yet, you know, so that when you get busy, everything's going in the right places. I'd also say buy yourself a domain name. You know, this is whenever I see somebody that their business email address is, you know, Hotmail or Yahoo or whatever it is, it's like, you know, that is basically telling the world that you're small. If you've got a business name that you're using, buy a domain name. It just looks so much more professional. And then if you change internet service providers, the domain name is still in use. It doesn't matter what you're doing behind the scenes. You haven't got to tell all your customers that you've changed email address. So I think that's really important. I think if you're taking anybody on, there's a huge number of things you've got to think about there to do with payroll and contracts, employment and all the rest. But I would strongly suggest reading the E-Myth Revisited, which, you know, I've mentioned quite a lot in some of my Friday night emails, getting a job description in place before you even start interviewing people. There's tons of stuff on the internet. You know, there's TED Talks and stuff on YouTube and articles. And the more things you look at, the more you start to become engaged in all the challenges that are ahead of you, and the quicker you will get to the destination that you want to get to.
Brilliant. Thank you, Michael. I feel like we could have talked about this subject for hours. There's so much in there, isn't there? Well, thank you. Thank you for giving us some of your time today, Malcolm.
Brilliant. Thanks, Charlotte.
No worries. Next week, we'll be discussing in more detail about how to identify that elusive break-even point. So if you have any questions on this topic, please email them over at inquiries@a4g-llp.co.uk. In the meantime, head to our social media at A4G Chartered Accountants, where we're providing a lot more guidance on this area and many others. Alternatively, check out our website, www.a4g-llp.co.uk, which is full of free tools, guidance, and plenty of food for thought to help your business start up the right way. Our Business Breakthrough Startup Program is designed to help you be confident in your business's future and beyond. And with our Getting Started session being the forefront of this program, we can address these issues and many more directly with you, giving you the advice and support you need from the outset. I've been your host, Charlotte, and this is Let's Get Down to Business.